Okay, so you know how like a set of blueprints lays out every little detail of a construction project, right? Like those intricate lines you always see. And ever wonder what happens when those plans have a mistake?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially when.
Especially with government contracts, right?
Oh, huge, yeah.
Today we're diving deep into a case about that exact problem.
Interesting.
United States v. Spirin back in 1918.
Okay.
Might sound like ancient history, but if you're into construction law, this case is huge.
Yeah.
Like for anyone studying or practicing law, especially when you've got public entities involved,
Foundational, yeah.
understanding Spirin is essential.
Absolutely.
And our goal today is to unpack this landmark ruling and see why it still matters so much today.
Right.
Like how we figure out who takes the hit when the owner's design has a flaw.
Yeah, that's the big question, right?
It all comes down to risk.
Exactly. Who's holding the bag when things go wrong?
This case really nails down a core principle.
Yeah, like in a project, who is responsible for what?
Right when the government's the owner and they give you super specific plans, what happens if those instructions cause problems?
Like if they lead you down the wrong path.
Exactly. Spirin gives a clear answer to that even all these years later.
It does. It's really stood the test of time.
Okay, so let's get into the details.
Right.
Back in 1916, can you walk us through the deal between George Spirin and the government?
Sure.
What was the project and what did Spirin have to do?
So in 1916, Spirin signs this contract with the U.S. government. It's a big one.
Okay.
To build a dry dock at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Wow.
The contract was fixed price $757,800.
Okay, so big money, even back then.
Oh, yeah, a lot of dough.
And where our story really starts is the relocation of this 6-foot sewer line.
Yeah, this is key.
The contract said this relocation had to be done exactly by the government's plans.
No deviation allowed.
No wiggle room.
Precisely. They gave him the plans and he had to stick to them.
So Spirin followed those government plans to the letter.
Yes, he did.
He finished the work and they accepted it.
They did. He built it exactly as
It's
instructed
just back.
to spec. The government looked it over.
Okay.
It met the requirements and they signed off on it.
Formally accepted.
Officially done deal. It seemed like a normal part of the project at that point.
So everyone moved on.
Yeah, they did.
But then about a year later, things went sideways with that sewer line.
Oh, yeah. Things went south fast.
What caused that failure and what happened to the project?
So, about a year after Spirin finishes the sewer work, there's this huge rainstorm
Okay.
and a really high tide.
Uh-oh, a combination.
Yeah, a bad combo. And the 6-foot sewer line that Spirin had relocated bursts.
Oh no.
It wasn't a small leak either. It flooded the whole construction site.
Wow, talk about a setback.
Huge setback stopped everything dead in its tracks.
So they had to figure out what happened.
They did a full investigation.
Okay.
Turns out there was all this pressure building up inside the sewer system,
Okay.
and that pressure was because of a hidden dam in a connecting 7-foot sewer line.
A hidden dam. That's a pretty big oversight.
It was massive, and the kicker is that this dam wasn't on any of the plans they gave Spirin.
It was just hidden.
Totally hidden, like a ticking time bomb underground.
Wow. So the government gave a design with a major flaw.
Yeah, it was a critical mistake, and it led directly to that sewer line failing.
So the government messed up with this hidden dam. Did they know about it beforehand?
That's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The officials who handled the contract said they didn't know about that specific dam. But here's the catch. They knew the area was prone to flooding and drainage
Oh,
problems.
so they knew something was up.
Yeah, they had a history of issues at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Okay.
But they didn't tell Spirin about any of this.
So they kind of withheld information.
It seems that way didn't give him the full picture.
So right off the bat, there's a potential problem with who has what information.
Definitely. And who's taking on the risk with those unknowns?
Yeah. So when that sewer line broke, how did Spirin react?
Well, he did what any reasonable contractor would do. He immediately told the government about the burst pipe and all the damage.
Right.
He'd built it exactly how they told him to, so he said it was their fault.
Because their plans were messed up.
Exactly. He said the government's bad design caused the whole thing.
So he said he wouldn't keep working until they owned up to the problem
He drew a line in the sand.
and made sure the sewer system would be safe going forward.
Yeah, he said, fix it and prove it's not going to happen again.
He wasn't going to risk building on a bad foundation.
Nope, he'd learned his lesson the hard way.
So how did the government respond to Spirin basically saying, I'm not working until you fix this?
Well, they didn't take responsibility.
Irene.
They said Spearn was the contractor, so it was his problem.
Even though he followed their plans.
Yeah. They said he was ultimately liable for the work, even if it was their design.
Wow. That's tough. Yeah. So they blamed him for their mistake.
It seemed that way, and it created a stalemate.
Yeah, because Spearn's not budging.
Nope. He's standing his ground saying, fix your design, then we'll talk.
What eventually happened? Did they reach some kind of agreement?
No. It dragged on for over a year.
Wow, 15 months.
15 months of back and forth.
Negotiations and investigations?
The whole nine yards, but they couldn't resolve it.
So what broke the stalemate?
The Secretary of the Navy stepped in.
Okay.
He canceled the contract.
Oh, wow.
Officially annulled it, and the government took over the site.
So the government took control.
They did, and that meant Spearin was free to sue them.
Yeah, because now he had a legal case.
Exactly. Yeah. He tried to work it out, but the government shut it down.
So what did Spearin want from this lawsuit?
Two main things.
Okay.
First, he wanted the money they still owed him for the work he'd already done.
Right, he'd earned that money.
Yeah, they hadn't paid him everything.
And second?
Second, he wanted damages for the government breaking the contract.
Because their actions cost him money.
Exactly. He argued that because they wrongfully terminated the contract, he lost a lot of money.
Including potential profits he would have made if they hadn't stopped the project.
Yeah, he was on track to make a good chunk of change, and they took that away.
So the first round of this legal battle was in the Court of Claims.
Right, that's the court that handles claims against the federal government.
And how did they rule?
They sided with Spearin.
Really?
Yeah, they said he had a good case, and they interested him $141,180.86.
Wow, that's a decent chunk of change.
It was a big win for Spearin.
So that covered the money he was owed, plus some extra for those lost profits.
Yeah, they figured he would have made about $60,000 in profit if he'd finished the project.
So round one goes to Spearin.
Big win for the little guy.
But as we know, sometimes these big legal fights don't end there.
Oh, no. This one was far from over.
The government appealed, right?
They weren't happy with the Court of Claims decision.
So where did they go next?
All the way to the top, they appealed to the Supreme Court.
The big league.
The highest court in the land.
So what were the key questions the Supreme Court was looking at?
They focused on two big issues. First, did the government have a valid reason to cancel the contract?
After Spearin refused to work because of the sewer problem.
Exactly. They were questioning if the government was justified in ending the whole thing.
Okay, so that's question one and the second.
The second is even bigger for construction law.
All right.
They looked at whether Spearin deserved to be paid damages because of those bad plans the government gave him.
Ah, so this goes way beyond just Spearin's case.
It does. It's about setting a precedent for how these government contracts work.
And who takes the blame when the government's designs have flaws?
Exactly. This case was about to make history.
And it did. The Supreme Court made a decision that's a cornerstone of construction law to this day.
It's a landmark case.
So what did they decide in United States v. Spearin?
The Supreme Court ruled unanimously in Spearin's favor.
Wow, so they shut down the government's arguments.
They did. They said the Court of Claims got it right and Spearin deserved those damages.
This is where the Spearin Doctrine was born, right?
This is it, the case that started it all.
So for those who are new to this or need a refresher.
Right. Some of our listeners might be learning about this for the first time.
What exactly is the Spearin Doctrine?
It boils down to this.
Okay.
If a contractor agrees to build something based on the owner's plans, they're not responsible for problems caused by mistakes in those plans.
So the owner takes the hit, not the contractor.
Exactly. The Supreme Court said there's an implied warranty from the owner.
Okay.
Meaning if the contractor follows the design, the result should be good.
So even if it's not written down, the owner is basically guaranteeing that their design will work.
That's the gist of it. The court said the government was basically saying, hey, this design is good to go build it.
And Spearin relied on that.
He had no reason to think the government's plans were messed up.
It makes sense if you hire an architect to design your house.
Right.
You expect that design to result in a house that won't fall apart.
You're trusting their expertise.
The Spearin Doctrine applies that same idea to construction contracts.
Exactly. It protects a contractor when the owner controls the design.
I bet the government had some strong arguments against this.
Oh, they did.
Like contracts often say the contractor has to inspect the site and take responsibility for their work.
What Danbird stuff.
So how did the Supreme Court handle those common contract clauses?
They tackled that head on.
Okay.
They said those general clauses don't erase the implied warranty about the design.
So Spearin had to check if he could build it.
Yeah, like if it was physically possible based on the plans.
But he didn't have to go digging into the site's history or uncover hidden problems.
Not his job. He wasn't a detective.
They said he wasn't expected to become a historian or geologist.
Right. He was a builder, not an investigator.
And they said he shouldn't have to pay for that kind of investigation.
Not on his dime.
So the court basically drew a line between building according to plans.
Right.
And being responsible for flaws in those plans themselves.
Exactly. Separate responsibilities.
And there's a famous quote from the Supreme Court decision that sums this up perfectly.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Can you remind us what it is and why it's so important?
Sure. Justice Brandeis wrote, "But if the contractor is bound to build according to plans and specifications prepared by the owner, the contractor will not be responsible for the consequences of defects in the plans and specifications."
Wow. That's powerful and direct.
It is. It lays it all out in one sentence.
It puts the responsibility squarely on the owner's shoulders.
If the owner gives you the plans and you follow them, you're not on the hook for their mistakes.
So United States v. Spearin went way beyond that broken sewer in Brooklyn.
It was a game changer.
It changed how we think about government contracts.
And construction contracts in general.
And it's still so relevant today. Why is that?
The Spearin Doctrine is crucial because it provides a fair and clear framework for dealing with risk.
Okay.
Especially in government projects.
When there are design defects.
Right. It says that when the owner creates the design, they have to make sure it's good.
Makes sense.
It stops owners from blaming contractors for problems that are caused by the owner's own mistakes.
It protects the contractor.
It does, and it's used all the time in legal disputes.
Like when projects get delayed or run over budget.
Or when there are defects in the final product that can be traced back to the owner's plans.
So it really brings some order to a complex area of law.
It does. It makes things more predictable and balanced.
Are there any limits to the Spearin Doctrine?
Yes, there are some exceptions.
Okay.
The big one is if the contractor knows about the problems in the plans before they start building.
Ah, so if they see a flaw and just ignore it.
Exactly. If they knowingly build something that's wrong, they can't hide behind the Spearin Doctrine.
Makes sense. You can't benefit from ignoring a known problem.
It's about acting in good faith.
But the owner usually has to prove that the contractor knew about the problem beforehand.
Right. It's not assumed.
So how does the Spearin Doctrine fit into the bigger world of contract law?
It ties in with the concept of implied warranties.
Okay.
Essentially, when the owner hands over those plans, they're making an implied promise that the design is decent.
An unwritten guarantee.
Exactly. And that warranty exists alongside all the other stuff that's written down in the contract.
Right.
But the Supreme Court made it clear in Spearin that those general clauses in a contract can't just wipe away this specific warranty about the design.
So it's an important layer of protection for contractors.
Especially in fixed price contracts where the price is set based on the owner's plans.
So for all our law students out there who are wrestling with contracts and construction law, what's the big takeaway from United States v. Spearin and the whole Spearin Doctrine?
The key takeaway is this.
Okay.
When the owner, especially the government, provides the design plans for a construction project,
okay,
they are the ones who are mainly responsible if there are problems with those plans.
Even if the contractor is the one doing the building?
Exactly. The contractor's job is to follow those plans, not to be a design expert.
So understanding this implied warranty about the design and how it interacts with all the other legal stuff in a contract.
It's crucial.
It's essential for anyone working in construction law.
Absolutely a cornerstone of the field.
That was a fantastic explanation. Really insightful.
Glad it was helpful.
So before we wrap up this deep dive into United States v. Spearin,
okay,
let's leave our listeners with something to think about.
Yeah, a little food for thought.
How would the Spearin Doctrine apply to newer, more complicated types of projects?
Interesting.
Like design-build contracts where the line between design and construction gets blurry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
How does a case from 1918 affect these modern contracts?
Right, where the roles are less clearly defined.
It's a crucial question as you keep exploring construction law.
It is. It shows how these foundational cases still matter today.
Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And thank you for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.